Welcome to another Blind Like Me. It's not the Ken folks, it's just Phil Parr coming into your homes for another Blind Like Me. And our guest is, we've had several folks ask us why we never had done an interview with this fella, especially one little lady who lives in Knoxville has been on us pretty hard. I bet you know who that is, don't you?
Miss Susie, I bet.
Yeah, she's asked me several times why I have not. We had you on Blind Like Me, but we know Blind Handyman, but we never did have you on Blind Like Me. Good morning, Clifford Wilson. How are you, sir?
Better than I deserve, as they say out in the country.
Better than you deserve. Well, and you're in what city in Tennessee?
Well, right now I'm in Madisonville, Tennessee. That's where my office is.
In Madisonville. Is that, do you live, is that where you live?
No, I live near a little town called Tellico Plains, Tennessee. Actually, I live 7 miles out in the country from it. And it's so small we don't have a stoplight or a...
Yeah,
I think we have 700 people on the weekends when everybody comes home from Atlanta.
Tellico Plains. You've been a Tennessean all your life, haven't you?
Yes.
You were born and raised in the great state of Tennessee.
Yes, sir. East Tennessee, actually. We're originally from Newport, Tennessee, and when I was 8 years of age, we moved to this current location, which is about 100 miles southwest, I guess you'd say, of where I was born.
Mm-hmm.
Still the mountains, though. We were on the north end of the Smoky Mountain National Park where I was born, and now we're on the south end. We're in the Cherokee National Forest here, surrounded by it.
Oh, you're surrounded by the Cherokee National Forest?
Yes, my home is. And we live in a valley, and the mountains all around us are all part of the Cherokee National Forest.
But you went off and went to school, but you came back to actually the area that you were born, where you were born and raised.
Well, yes, where I was raised. From 8 years of age, this was home, this county was.
And, yeah.
I have deep roots here now.
And let's talk about your early life, when you were a child. What is your level of vision?
I have nothing now. I've lost light perception at this point. I had light perception up till my late 50s. I'm 63 years of age now. So I had travel vision up until my mid-20s. And I have RP, which was diagnosed at age 4. And I could never see well enough to drive or read or anything like that, just travel vision up until mid to late 20s, I could get around in areas where I was familiar.
Yeah.
And I could still see faces up until I was early 20s, mid-20s. Still see mountains and valleys up even in as late as my early 30s. We went to Yellowstone National Park when I was 32, and I can remember seeing the lake and the reflection of the mountains in the lake and that sort of thing. But that it's all gone now, but I'm glad I had, what I did as long as I did.
Oh, man, I was just thinking I would love to have had that.
Yeah,
hell of a loss, but, I mean, it's a terrible loss, but you did have that much.
And frankly, it does help in my business because lots of times when you're talking about distances and times and all that sort of thing, having seen and known what those are, it does help me to understand that better, I think.
Well, and you know about colors.
You
understand that.
Oh, yes.
But you knew from I guess when you, from the time that you became aware of things, that someday you would be without vision at all.
No, I didn't really.
Oh, you didn't?
They didn't tell me what the future held for me as a young person, and I just had to experience it.
Yeah.
It's one of those deals where there's no one day or no one month when I could say my eyesight is different than it was last month or last year. It's hard to tell. It was such a slow process that
gradually went away.
Right. But
yeah.
No, you had to look back years, really, to be able to tell differences. Yeah.
Now, they sent you as a child when you got ready for schooling. They sent you to a blind school, or what?
Yes,
did they?
I went to the Tennessee School for Blind starting at age 5.
It's actually you and I roughly. I'm 65, and so you were born about 42. So this was, we're talking late 40s.
Right.
Sent you, and there was no choice then.
That was it.
That's what they did with blind children. Then was sent them to this. At one time, they called it the Texas Asylum for the Blind. That's a little harsh, isn't it? We may have called it some other things, but
we certainly did. And, but I tell you what, I really got a first-class education at the Tennessee School for the Blind. I really did, and I'll always be thankful that my folks didn't want to keep. They had a choice, really, of keeping me at home, and no law at that time would have required me to attend school anywhere.
Yeah.
They thought it was important that I obtain an education, even though my parents were not educated well. My dad had a third grade education, and my mother a ninth grade education. But they felt it important that we get as much as we could have, and that included me. I was the oldest of five children, so I really received a better education over there than my siblings did in the public schools.
We got those kids occasionally that Daddy had kept down on the farm. They'd come in at age 10 or 12 to the blind school with no skills, some couldn't feed themselves, couldn't dress themselves. They just felt sorry for little Johnny because he couldn't see, so they didn't educate him and figured he couldn't be educated. So, yeah, your parents did the right thing.
Oh, yeah. They made me do just as much as my siblings did. I tell folks as long as I could chop corn, I had to do so with the rest of them. And when they got to the point where I was cutting down more corn and leaving the Johnson grass, they ran me out of the field. But until that time, I had to do my share. And making me work and do as much as I could, as I was able to do, it was just as good as the thing my parents, you couldn't do better for your kids than that.
If you have a blind child parent that has a blind child, the best thing you can do is treat that child as normal. I mean, he or she is going to fall and run into things and get hurt, and so are other kids, you know.
Sure. You don't want to let them walk off a cliff. It's going to kill them, but...
Well, no.
You know, if they run into a wall and bump their head, they're going to not run into that wall next time.
They don't know that wall. That wall is there. I could run when I was a kid. I ran all the time. I remember running into my daddy had a little shop, and I ran into it, and I jumped up and said, "Who put that shop there?" You know, I'm just a little kid, but I didn't know any. That's the way to treat a blind child. What was your sibling situation? You had brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have three brothers and one baby sister. So.
And you had three brothers, and you were the oldest. But I bet they treated you, gave you a hard time, didn't they?
Well, I was big brother, and of course, when I came home, as you well know from going to school for the blind, it was going home was a wonderful occasion.
Huh, it was what you lived for.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, we stayed from, we'd go over there in the 1st of September and stay till Christmas, and then come back for a two-week break at Christmas, come back home, and then go back in January and stay till May.
Really? You didn't go home Thanksgiving and Easter?
No.
Really?
No, it was over 200 miles to where my home.
In 1949, folks, that's a long way. I don't care if you had a car, it's a long way still.
Well, it was a six-hour bus ride, and that was after we'd driven 50 miles to get to the bus terminal. So.
Well, and if you had a car and you did it, there wasn't any roads, and the roads were narrow and dusty and no one any air conditioning, and it was just a hell of a, it was a terrible drive, 200 miles.
Well, it was unrealistic for pants back at those days. It really was.
Now we drive that far to eat.
Oh, yeah.
You know. That's amazing.
My wife today, she'll say, well, I can't imagine treating my child or grandchild like that today. Well,
yeah.
You know, she can't put herself back in the 40s either.
Yeah, no, she can't.
She really just does not realize what it was like. I was treated no differently than the other children at the school for the blind because their parents were the same boat mine were in, basically.
And we've talked several times, and we'll do it again, about how hard that must have been on your mama.
Oh, it was.
It killed her.
It was tough on our parents.
It was horrible. You know, they didn't want to send little Clifford off 200 miles away to a school. They wanted to keep him home and fix him oatmeal in the morning.
You're
know.
Right.
But anyway, so you start learning Braille, I guess. You're a Braille user?
Yes, I am. I started Braille at the very beginning.
Yeah. And still use it today, right?
I still use the old slate and stylus today. I make my notes with a slate and stylus even today.
They must have taught you folks well, because Susie is she's the fastest Braille writer I've ever seen. And she can get down on it. She takes phone numbers and what. I guess you do the same thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because in your business, let's point out that you were an attorney at law practicing. You're in your office right now.
I am, yes. I've been doing it nearly 38 years.
And so an attorney has to take a lot of notes. You have to.
Oh, yes, I do now. When I first started, I didn't. I could remember. But well, the old brain is not what it used to be 35 years ago.
No, it didn't.
I've got too much in the hard drive or something because I have to write it down now to remember it. But,
well, somebody comes in and wants you to get them a divorce or do anything for them, you need to get some facts from them in order to get your secretary to type up a file or get you to type up a, because you need to start a file on these people. I mean, they're going to give you some money and they want you to do something and you need to know what the hell you're going to do.
Yes, right. First of all, you need the contact information.
Yeah,
you know, their address,
right.
Phone numbers, et cetera. And I always want to have that handy so that I don't have to depend on staff to find that for me.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, you write down a summary of the issues that we're going to be dealing with.
Yeah.
And sometimes it depends on how complicated the case is. How many, you know, some cases I'll have 20 pages of notes on.
But now, well, we'll get back to your childhood in just a minute. But now you are a computer user, but you don't do that on the computer.
No.
When an initial for somebody comes in.
No, I don't trust my computer that well. Maybe I should, but. I started out, I guess it's just a matter of habit. I started out taking my notes in Braille. I like doing that. I like to have that handy.
Uh-huh.
And I do, yes, I use a computer for more for email and that sort of thing. I get my decisions, my Tennessee court decisions now by email.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Do we have a thing in Texas we call Westlaw, and I don't know if that is.
That's a nationwide.
Can you? Is the Westlaw website accessible to blind people?
Yes. It is with training. I happen to subscribe to a different one than Westlaw right mm-hmm. now because of advantageous deal through the Bar Association, but there's more than one. Site out there that offers online legal research.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about here. And, of course, in my case, as I say, I get this through the Bar Association where I get a summary each day of all the cases that are decided by our appellate courts in Tennessee. And then if I want to read a particular case, all I have to do is download it, and I can do that. I did this morning. In fact, I get here in the morning early each day, and the first thing I do is go through my email, including the newest cases that have just been decided. I read those that are of interest to me, and those that I need to preserve for future use, I'll print out.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have a Braille printer that I don't utilize as much as I probably should, but I do occasionally use it for jury lists and things like that that take a lot of time and effort, and so I'd rather have the girls just print those out for me.
But suffice to say, you were a serious Braille user.
Oh, yes.
No question about it. Let's get back to your childhood. From what I've gathered, and I've done interviews with other people, the Tennessee School for the Blind was a fairly good school.
Yes, sir. It's, I think, one of the top three in the country.
They treated you fairly well. They educated you quite well. I would guess that you probably did well in school, that your academic prowess was probably good. You probably made good grades.
Well, I was valedictorian. I was fortunate enough to be that in my class, so I guess you'd call that fairly good.
I think you would. I'd say that's pretty good. Did you do anything musically in school? Did you play in the band? Did you sing, or what did you do?
Yeah, I played the sousaphone. If you're familiar with those little instruments.
Big old sousaphone.
Oh, yes. Yeah. My mouth was so big that I couldn't play a trumpet or anything like that. So the only thing had a mouthpiece on it big enough was a sousaphone for me. So that's what
you're playing.
I ended up being the bass section.
Well, that's good. Somebody had to be.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and I enjoy that. I still, today, I'll be humming along, and people wonder if I've lost my mind because I'll be humming the bass parts.
Yeah. So you did that, and of course they had, I guess, a chorus of some kind. Did you sing? Were you?
Oh yes, I'm afraid so.
You did. You were.
It's hard to imagine, but I did.
Well, everybody sang back then. You go in high school or junior high, well, you're in the chorus, you know, and you, even if you can't sing, you're surrounded by hopefully some people who can.
Oh yes, I'll never forget singing a solo for the governor, Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Is that right?
Oh yes, I mean, I'd have to be awfully drunk to do that today, I'll tell you. I mean, I'd have to really have a good one tied on before I would do something.
But you sang a solo for the governor of Tennessee.
Yes.
Who was the governor of Tennessee at that time?
Ellington. Right.
You
governor
know,
Ellington.
Of course, when I hear that, when I think about the governor of Tennessee, I think about that old Red Foley song. If I should ever be governor of Tennessee, I'll prove my friendship then. Remember, you know, I guess you don't remember that, do you?
No, that's like before my time.
Ernest Tubb and Red Foley. What will you do for me, dog catcher? You will be. Well, you're a real good friend every time I think. Anyway, so you sang a solo for the governor of Tennessee. What age were you?
Let me say, I sang a solo. I think I sang one verse as a solo of Battle Hymn Republic. I didn't sing the whole.
Yeah.
The whole chorus was there, and I just had one. One verse.
What age were you when this happened?
Oh, 19.
Really? So you're about ready to get out of school,
right?
Yeah,
that's my senior year.
And the Tennessee School for the Blind was a good experience. You did it in 12 years. They taught you Braille.
Well, actually 13.
13.
Yeah, the fifth grade I decided I wasn't going to do anything that the teachers wanted me to do.
I know.
And so they said, well, you know what? You get to stay another year. And I said, whoa, wait a minute, folks. That wasn't in the plan here, you know.
A little rebellious streak there. Fifth grade,
so.
About 12 years old, 11 years old.
Yeah.
Kind of deciding what you're going to do there. I tell you what, let's do here. Let's take a little short break and be back and get Clifford into college. And that's an interesting story. I've heard a little bit about it. Hang on. We'll be back with more Blind Like Me in just a second.
A website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Sight, here's Tim Cummings.
Have you ever been reading something and there's a word that you come across that you don't know what it means and you say, boy, I'd really like to look that up in an easy manner? Well, now you can. If you go to www.dictionary.com, you can look up any word. It's very easy to use. There's a search box where you can type in the word and you can either look up the definition of the word or look up a synonym for the word. It's a very easy site to use. I would give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. The website again is www.dictionary.com for Blind Sights. This is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights.
there. It's Blind Like Me. Clifford Wilson is our guest from Tennessee. We've gotten him graduated from the Tennessee School for the Blind at age 19 years old. And it's time to decide to make some decisions about what you're going to do the rest of your life. And let's tell us about that. What did you want to do?
Well, what I wanted to do was become a physicist. I loved physics and math and science. That was my first love. And so I went off up to Tennessee Tech, which is a school that I decided to attend, and wandered into the physics professor's office. And he proceeded to explain to me that I couldn't become a physicist, that I didn't know how to use a slide rule, or asked. He inquired if I knew how to, and I'd never seen one, couldn't see well enough to use one, and he then proceeded to tell me, that being the case, that I could not understand.
Couldn't be done.
Pardon?
It couldn't be done.
Couldn't be done, right. It was just, wasn't a matter of try hard or make any kind of adaptations or anything like that. Just, nope, you can't do it. Go somewhere else. So, I wandered out not knowing any better, and
were you already enrolled in school, or were you just going up to talk to him about it?
I had been accepted into the school, but my major and all that hadn't been decided at that point. And so I wandered over to pre-law. That was be my second choice. I'd always been interested in the law and politics in addition to science, so they said, yeah, we can't imagine why anybody would hire a blind lawyer, but if you want to come in here and take our course, we'll let you do it. Well, that was better than the first offer, so
these people didn't know much about blind people. They didn't.
They really didn't. To be honest, a lot of folks didn't. Even the law, the people in my law school, my dean, who I really liked, and he liked me. When I graduated from law school and he introduced me to the Supreme Court, he made a point of pointing out my achievements, picked me out of a whole class, and I was sort of embarrassed by that. But he was still concerned that I wouldn't be able to be successful because he didn't think people that sighted folks would hire a blind lawyer.
And we're up into the 60s now.
We're into the 1967 is when I actually graduated from law school.
Supposedly the enlightened 60s. And they were still saying nobody's going to hire a blind lawyer.
Right. Now, bear in mind, he wasn't wishing. He wasn't hoping that would be the case at all. That wasn't his concern. He just didn't think it would happen. And it turns out that I was fortunate enough to win some cases right off the bat, and it's been a good it's not been a solid success. You hear people say, well, this lawyer's never lost a case.
Yeah.
Well, if that lawyer's never lost a case, he's not taken many tough cases.
He didn't go to court much, did he?
No, he didn't, because you're going to lose some cases if you get in there and wrestle with them. I mean, you really are.
But now, back to this, when you first went to college and the guy said you have never seen or you cannot operate a slide rule, in retrospect, could you have done it?
I don't know still about a slide rule, but I know that the physics courses I did take, which in all fairness were the 100-level physics courses, were not the advanced, so it may not be fair to judge based on that, but I had straight hundreds. And in those three quarters of physics
that you ended up taking,
right? And I've always thought that if I had to do over again, I would have tried physics. I might have failed, that's possible, but I would have given it a try. And there are some blind physicists around the country. I've met a couple.
I was just fixing to say that I've interviewed at least one, maybe two. Of course, Max. You know Max Robinson.
Oh,
you know,
sure. Who,
Max has fairly good sight, so he had a little advantage. But this guy, I can't think of his name, that works at the SETI Institute, has a degree in physics, is totally blind.
Yeah, there's a gentleman I talked with once by email out in Phoenix, I believe it is, who has a physics degree. Now, he said it was tough.
Well, it'd be tougher if you could see.
Yeah. probably so, and I know engineering's a tough, at Tennessee Tech, that is an engineering school, so I had a lot of roommates who were engineers, and I know how tough it was for them with 20/20 vision.
Yeah, but you decided that law would work out. Now, I guess it's the same everywhere. In Texas, you have to have a degree before you can go to law school.
Well, that's the way it is here. At that time, though, in the early 60s, your first year of law school counted as your last year of undergraduate school.
Okay.
So I was able to get basically what should normally be 7 years of college in 6 years, the equivalent of.
Yeah, in 6 years.
Now, they can't do that any longer. That was changed shortly after I got through the system.
Well, you can't do it in Texas. You have to have an undergraduate degree. Like Lou Ann has it. My wife has a degree in journalism. And she realized at the end of journalism school that she didn't want to come home and work for $7 an hour for the local newspaper, so she went to law school.
My undergraduate degree was in social science, you couldn't do much with those back in the 60s. I mean, you might have been able to get a job with the Department of Human Services, but that would have been very doubtful.
Yeah, they wouldn't. It'd be easier to do now because of seems like people are more enlightened about blind folks now. I don't know if that's true or not.
I think it is. I believe there's many more opportunities today than there was in the 60s for blind folks, and I'm glad of that. I mean,
it's wonderful. And so you got a law degree, and you went back to your hometown. You went home where
that's
your parents were.
Yeah, that's correct. Did
you hadn't married then? You hadn't.
No.
You, all you had was Clifford to take care of.
That's right. And I started out at a guarantee of $150 a month. I found this fellow who had a back office. He would let me hang out there, and he said, "I'll give you $150 a month to come in here, and you probably do some work for me that I can't handle." And I gave you that much of a guarantee, so I started out with a blistering $150 a month, if you can imagine.
Now, what did he want you to do that he couldn't handle? What was his thinking?
Well,
there?
His overflow, basically, of some of the work that he didn't have time to deal with, and that lasted only for about 6 weeks. And after I'd taken a couple of cases and been successful on my own, he decided that maybe I had some of the right stuff and made me a partner. So it was a partnership then until I left that partnership in 1982. He was running my partner decided to run for judge, and had he been successful at that, that would have meant I couldn't practice a whole lot of areas that I like to, so I decided at that point to strike out on my own and establish my own private office, which I did in 1982, and have been doing that ever since.
But you worked for him for 10, 12 years.
We worked together.
You worked together, yeah.
We had an arrangement where we worked for each other, I guess you'd say, as a cooperative arrangement.
Yeah.
But it worked out. It worked out good.
Now we're still talking about a medium small town in Tennessee.
Yes, we have 3,000 population. The county has about 30,000 population.
And so there really weren't many lawyers, were there? I mean, there weren't
20 in the low 20s.
Man, that's about 15 too many, isn't it? I think we got 40,000 people and 97 lawyers in Lufkin, Texas. It's pathetic. Anyway, you began actually going to court and actually on your own writing briefs. If you had to appeal a case, or you would you worked up the case on your own with braille notes and you were able to do that by yourself.
Well, I had, of course, good secretaries.
Yeah,
I have had all along, and they're, as far as I'm concerned, a lawyer that tries to go without a good secretary is foolish.
Yeah, you went to law school, and if you're doing that's what I always think you'd be a pretty expensive typist.
Yeah, you're right.
Went to law school.
And I know better than try to spell anyway. I'm a lousy speller. If it wasn't for spell check, I wouldn't even send out an email. But
God bless spell check. He's right. I'm a horrible speller, but I do fine with spell check.
Yeah, I can sort of get by with using spell check to send out emails, but no, I wouldn't dare try to type a document on my own and send it out without without someone else going over it. I know better. But I've also known that that's been one of my weaknesses all along is spelling. So I do have a fairly good comprehension of the English language as far as spoken is concerned, and managed to do, I think I'm a pretty decent letter writer and that sort of thing.
Oh yeah, your grammar is impeccable. I mean, you as they'd say in Lufkin, Texas, you talk good.
I write a lot better than I talk. Actually, I'm a hillbilly to the core, and I murder the English language, as you've been hearing in this interview. But the folks in this part of the country understand me very well. Don't have a bit of problem, and I've gotten over the idea that I'm a hillbilly and ought to be ashamed of it. In fact, I'm quite proud of it these days.
Well, you should be. And everybody in your part of the country talks just like you do, don't they?
That's correct.
That's the deal. Do you remember the first time you, as a new, brand new lawyer, do you remember the first time you appeared before a judge?
Yes.
I'm sure it was a terrifying experience.
Well, no, not really.
Really?
It wasn't that terrifying. It was new for me, needless to say, and you have butterflies, but in fact, it was a very unusual case, I guess you'd say, because I was representing a fellow who I went up before this judge who had revoked a bond. This guy had signed a bond for his son.
Uh-huh.
Son didn't show up. So the judge just issued an order for this guy to pay up on the bond.
That's what they did.
And I went before the judge to explain that, Your Honor, you're supposed to first issue this, what's called a CIFA, or an order to show cause why that shouldn't happen, and you didn't do that. And the judge proceeded to tell me how these people were renegades and criminals and no good, and I was representing a bunch of low-class folks, and he didn't even bother to open the file and look to see what I was telling him, and just simply overruled what I had to say, just completely ignored what I said. Well, that turns out was not a good thing on his part, because I was able to come back to our local chancery court and obtain an injunction against the enforcement of that order, because he had not followed what the rule said. And I successfully obtained that injunction prohibiting the sheriff and the clerk from doing what the judge had ordered.
You're telling me that the first thing you ever did before a judge was tell him he'd screwed up?
That's right. And I don't think that judge ever appreciated me after that either, but I wasn't back before him very often. But that's right. Judges have to follow the law, too, and he was so carried away with, the folks I was representing were not pillars of the community, needless to say. The guy wouldn't have been in jail or wouldn't have been on bond if he hadn't had a brush with the law, at least. And I don't know. The judge just he was interested in making a show for the folks who was there in the courtroom about how tough he was, and you still need to go by the rules, though. And that's all I was trying to explain to him, that this is what you got to do first, Judge. You can't just order the money paid in the court. You've got to go through the process. And he wasn't doing it.
Well, I think we can both admit, nobody's going to hear us, but I think we can both admit that sometimes judges get a little bit full of themselves when they become judges.
Sure, sure they do, and that's That's human nature. I'm one of them now, so I.
You can identify with that.
You're older. I'm only a municipal judge, though, and that's just one day of a month, so I don't get carried away too much with that.
You don't have too much power.
No, I'm afraid not. We only enforce city ordinances and traffic violations, that sort of thing. So it's I don't throw people in the pokey. All I have the authority to do is issue fines and that sort of thing. So it's not I don't have the power that a court of record would have, as we call them. But still, it gives you an opportunity to look at things from a different perspective that way. And I enjoy the work. We try to keep down a crime wave in our little town.
You're not sending hardened criminals to prison.
No.
Like that.
Those folks go to state court. They do not show up in municipal court.
I believe the thing that would probably bother me the most about being an attorney would be not knowing the physical layout of the courtroom. That would intimidate me a lot. Did you have any idea what this courtroom looked like before you went there?
First time.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, bear in mind that was in my mid-20s.
Uh-huh.
I still had a little bit of travel vision left at that time.
All right. So you weren't going to fall over the court reporter.
No, I could still see enough at that time to sort of tell where things were. I'd have to come into the room and get familiar with it ahead of time, even then, because one of the problems I had, if I walked out of sunlight into the dark room, I'd have to stop dead still for, I don't know, 5 minutes, I guess, before my eyes would acclimate to the lower light level.
Really?
So it's like being totally blind for several minutes, and I'd have to wait until my eyes adjusted, and once they did, then I was all right. So I had to always get there early and acquaint myself with the layout of everything, but even then I had secretaries with me. I started bringing secretaries to court with me right at the very beginning.
Yeah.
A habit that some of my competitors now have elected to follow as well.
Well, and you weren't in a big city setting where, I mean, there were only a couple of courtrooms that you were going to have to deal with.
That's true, in the home county.
In the home county. And when you went somewhere else, of course, like you said, you could take a sighted lady. Well, somebody had to drive you anyway, so you
sure.
Might as well let her go to court with you. That would be the only thing that would bother me, would be wanting to know where I was and wanting to know the lake. Because, you know, when I got it, every time somebody hired me to do something, I'd always go there the night before and look at the, like we talked about, look at the lay of the physical lay of the land, so you wouldn't fall over the receptionist trying to go get coffee. Look real blind, you know?
Yeah, so I guess the worst offender I've ever been in that is once when I went to Blount County, and I was listening to the judge, and I'd face the judge and talk to the judge. What I didn't know at the time was I was facing the speaker, and the speaker was about 45 degrees off from where the microphone was. I was not looking at the judge at all, and the girls with me, I guess, didn't have the she didn't want to jump up there and, you know, turn me around and say, wait a minute, you know.
I don't know why not.
Well, she's a little bashful.
Yeah.
And anyway, I got it straightened out after that first talking to a speaker. She explained what was going on, and I then started facing the judge where the microphone was. But that's a little strange to talk, even then, to talk off at a different angle. But once you're, you know,
what you're hearing, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little odd. Places that's not a problem.
I did a show in Longview with Ray Price about a year ago, opened the show, and I was a little wrong way, and my wife just walked out on the stage during a song and turned me around, moved me, got me facing the audience. And it didn't bother me one bit. I needed to face the audience, and
yes,
that was, you know, everybody understood, you know, and of course you get, I'm not ashamed of being blind at all. It doesn't bother me, but you don't want to look real blind. Sometimes it bothers me a whole lot less now than it would have when I was 20 years old.
Well, speaking of that, how did that didn't you do a show with him just recently?
I did last Thursday. Notice how I worked us into that, didn't you?
Well, how did that go?
It went fine. We had about 1,600 people in an auditorium that seats 1,700.
Well, that's great.
We had a governor's proclamation from the governor declaring it Ray Price Day, and our mayor got up and saluted Ray Price. They gave him he had won an Emmy for the song For the Good Times, but he had lost the actual physical statue somewhere. You know, of course, Ray is Ray might tipple occasionally or might, you know, and anyway, he misplaced this statue, so they got him another one made, a brand new one, and okay. presented it to him on his 80th birthday.
Well, I had a classmate, believe it or not, I think, that played with Ray's band for a while. I had a high school classmate that was a drummer and went on tour with a lot of the country music bands. And Ronald Bridges, who was he's no longer active in music, at least, but he played a lot of the well-known bands that we know today from that era.
Now, this was a blind school classmate?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, one of the great things about being in Nashville is we had country music performers coming to the school.
Really?
Brenda Lee and, who all did come out there? Minnie Pearl was out there a lot.
I imagine. Rod Brasfield, Ernest Tubb, did he come?
Ernest Tubb never did come. Rod Brasfield did. String Bean.
Yeah.
You remember String Bean?
Well, Ernest would have come if somebody suggested it to him. He was a very gentle, nice, wonderful fella. He'd have come if somebody thought of it.
He may have. I don't know all the times, but there was a lot of those folks who come out and give us concerts there in the auditorium. And we, of course, went out to a lot of the events there in Nashville, the Nashville Symphony. When the Marine Band came to town, we'd go listen to them. And I remember Rafael Mendez came to town once, and Segovia came to town once, and we got to go listen to those people. I mean, that's top-notch performers.
It is.
We were getting we were getting a lot of opportunities that the public school kids just did not have.
Well, and of course, the famous Hargis Pig Robbins went to the Tennessee school.
Oh, sure, he was ahead of me about about 6 years, and I knew Pig.
Wonderful player and a great individual. I'm looking forward to visiting with him. I'm gonna come to Tennessee and see all of you one of these days.
Glad to have you.
Let's take a break, and then we want to talk about blind people dancing. You knew we weren't going to get out without talking about that, didn't you?
Fair enough.
We've got to bring that up. Be back in just a minute with more of our little show called Blind Like Me. Hang on.
Of the Blind Handyman Show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, but we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, so we formed this Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as Blind Like Me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, I want a nice house and kids and a good job, but how am I going to do that? And I had no idea. And I think the Blind Like Me show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love.
Are you on the Blind Like Me list?
And I have made a lot of new friends on the Blind Like Me list that I'll never forget.
Well, them crazy people on that Blind Like Me list just talk about the silliest thing.
To join the Blind Like Me list, send a blank email to blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Okay, I love being on the Blind Like Me list because I'm the moderator, and I get to delete people if I want to.
If you enjoy chatting with other blind folks, come join us on the Blind Like Me list. Send a blank email to blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Phil Parr and Blind Like Me. Our guest is Clifford Wilson from Tennessee. He's an attorney, a practicing attorney, still practices. And I guess I told my wife I was going to interview a totally blind attorney. She said, "Well, what kind of law does he practice? What do you? What sort of law do you specialize at all?"
Well, I don't specialize per se, but I no longer do some of the things I once did. I after 25 years practicing criminal law, I got out of that. So I limit my practice now to civil cases. Of course, most people are familiar with divorce cases and all sorts of domestic relations cases. I do those. I do both plaintiff and defendant wrongful death or personal injury type cases. I represent one insurance company, and I do their work here in the county, and I enjoy that, believe it or not, because sometimes when folks try to make a mountain out of a molehill, it can get to be entertaining. And I do that kind of work. But I represent folks who are injured and need somebody to help them and represent their interest. And I do that as well. And I do a lot of real estate transactional type work.
Well, and I imagine you probably help folks prepare wills and deed transactions and... And you sit in on real estate closings? Do you do those kind of things?
Not so much of those. I try to leave those to other folks. I do a lot of deeds, just simple, straight sales transactions.
Yeah.
Do those. But if they're complicated closings, I try to leave those to someone else.
Well, there are companies that specialize in those
of
things that's what they do. And, of course, Lou Ann realizes, just like you do, that in a town your size, you have to do a little bit of everything.
You're in general practice, you're correct.
Yeah, you've got to do. She does all kinds of things. She doesn't do much criminal, but her brother does. I mean, they'll do. It's done in house. She does a lot of domestic, and it's great. After Christmas, you get a lot of domestic. Those folks come in, if they didn't get what they wanted for Christmas, they might want a little divorce. We call this the divorce season. They come in pretty good. Now, we alluded to it, but let's get into it. You have at some point in time became interested in dancing.
Well, I danced as a kid at the School for the Blind. We were taught how to do the two-step and the waltz and, you know, basic ballroom-type dancing and even some of the square dancing. And once I lost my vision, I quit doing that. I guess I hadn't danced in 30-something years.
Really?
And Larry Fain, who was a classmate of mine, was playing at a local dance hall. And the lady asked me if I'd like to go down and listen to Larry play. And I knew Larry was a wonderful musician, so I said, "Well, sure, I'd love to do that." So she said, "I'll come and get you." So she did, and we went down there and was listening to them, and they were all out on the floor dancing. And she said, "Why don't you go out and dance with me?" And I said, "Well, I don't want to kill somebody, you know." Figured I would. She said, "No." I said, "I'll show you how to. I'll give you hand signals, and we'll avoid running into folks. Won't we try it?" She kept on, and I finally relented and went out. And by golly, I found out I could do it still. still knew the old two-step and the waltz and all that. And
enjoyed it.
Enjoyed it a bunch. And then a couple other ladies came up to her and asked her, how in the world do you dance with a blind guy? And she explained to them how it worked. And so they came over and said, like to dance. So I said, okay. And there's a few rough starts there. One lady came and got me one time but didn't realize I couldn't see, and she'd had a bit of refreshment before she got there. I ended up trying to pick her up and literally carry her around on the floor so we could move. She about panicked when she figured out I couldn't tell where the heck we were going.
Yep. But,
anyway, it's been a fun thing. I have about a dozen or more ladies now who got the nerve to dance with me, and I go regularly, and I love it. In fact, it's the best exercise I get each week now, and they seem to enjoy dancing with someone who's, I do have rhythm, and I do know some dance steps, so I've ended up teaching a few of them some new steps they didn't know.
Yeah, that's what I'd heard. And you do this every week. You go every week and dance.
Well, most weeks, unless I have a conflict or some reason I can't go.
Yeah. And you find it no problem. I mean, you just let her keep you from running into other couples
right.
on the dance floor.
Right. I normally will set. You know, I can tell where we are on the floor, generally speaking, by the location of the band.
Yeah.
And I figured out, you know, generally where the edges of the place are. And it has a fence around the thing, so to speak, anyway. So all you do is run into a little short wall if you get too close to the edge.
Yeah.
And that's no big deal if I do. I don't worry about that anymore. At one time, it would have embarrassed me to death, but it doesn't anymore.
No, it wouldn't. At age 63, it wouldn't bother you one damn bit, would it?
No. But if we're about to run into someone, they just give me a little hand gesture that says go the other way, or just it's very simple to do. It is really
and
simple.
And this place you go the same place every week, and so most of the folks know you, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, most of the people do, and I, of course, do go. I've gone to one other place too. But most of the time I do go to the same place.
And this is not something your wife enjoys. This is something you go into.
That's right. Well, in fact, she won't go. She
won't.
She stays home and watches Home and Garden TV. She likes that better than going dancing. So,
well, to each his own, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, that if she's going to find things wrong with my dancing, which she's very good at doing that, I must say.
at finding things wrong with your at what you do.
Yes.
I've got one that does the same thing.
Yeah, they spot errors at 100 yards, whereas no one else seems to find them, you know.
Yeah.
But it works out well that way. I mean,
it's
something she doesn't enjoy and I do. And
why not do it?
Yeah. It's my night out, I guess you'd say.
Absolutely no reason not to. Now, but you also have, let's see, we had you on Handyman, and you talked about, don't you have a hideaway of some kind that you go to, cabin that you own?
Well, I have the only interest I have in it is sweat equity. I have a friend who owns 80 acres up in the mountains, and we built yes, you'd call it a hideaway at, I forgot the name I used to describe it before, but it's a shelter, basically, where you have a place for picnicking downstairs.
Uh-huh.
It's open, and then upstairs we've made a sleeping loft where you could put a small troop of Boy Scouts, or at least you're up off the ground, and it's a good place to put your sleeping bags.
Uh-huh.
It's about 2,000 feet in elevation. We got two mountain streams running down through the property, and it's right underneath one of the biggest mountains up there, which is really nice to go either hiking or jeep riding up the mountain. And it's just a wonderful location. You get up there, and about the only thing you hear most of the time is a few jet planes flying over at high elevations, and that's about the only sign of humanity there is.
But you are, by doing this, you are also familiar with how to be with the physical, how to build, how to do, how the walls are constructed, and how houses are built, or how, you know, things are constructed.
My dad was a carpenter.
Yeah.
And I grew up knowing how houses were built because I'd go visit him on the job, and then of course our home burned when I was 13, so we had to build our own home. And I was one of the primary mules that helped that process.
Yeah.
I got to help with all stages of the constructing our own home,
yeah.
So that was a good experience.
Now, do you have a home shop? Do you have a place there at your house where you shop,
well,
that you work in?
It's not as good as I'd like. I have some tools. I have a table saw and an electric miter saw that we use.
Uh-huh.
We do things like trim work in the home and things like that. I don't do a whole lot of from scratch as far as I don't do much furniture. But my son comes up and we together do some things. We built bookshelves, things like that. Not real fancy. We're not not gifted, but.
But if you want a shelf somewhere, you just build it yourself. You you don't go to Lowe's and buy it. You just make it, custom make it.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Now, your son, you alluded to your son. How many children do you have, sir?
I have one son who's 25, one grandson who's wonderful, 3 years of age.
Yeah.
And he gave us a shock yesterday, I'll have to say. He's with my wife, and we had a fellow coming in to install a new microwave, and he stood up and said, "Nana, I swallowed that magnet." It turned out that magnet was a battery. So off to the emergency room we all go in a panic.
He swallowed a battery.
He swallowed a little one of these little button-sized batteries.
Little flat batteries they make now. Yeah.
I don't know why in the world he had it in his mouth, but...
Because he's 3 years old, that's
why. He's 3 years old, and he told her he swallowed that magnet, and she said, "I don't have any magnets." So she thankfully had another battery there and asked him if that's what it was, and he said, "Yes, that was what it was."
Well, what did they do at the emergency room? They pumped his stomach and got it out?
No, they just x-rayed him and found it and gave him a round of laxative to hopefully move it on through in a hurry.
Well, that was the old joke, you know. The guy came home and his wife said, "Johnny swallowed a quarter," and the dad said, "Well, hell, just take it out of his allowance, you know." but the grandson's all right.
Well, we hope it hadn't passed yet.
Huh?
Not yet, but we're hoping it will.
Well, I feel sure it will. I don't see how it would hurt him unless it. They don't have any acid in them anymore. New batteries don't do these little batteries like that.
I don't know what these little tiny ones have in them, frankly, but they're sealed up pretty good.
They are.
And he's showing no signs of distress, I'll put it that way.
Well, that'll be good to show him on his 18th birthday. Look what you did when you were 3 years old. Clifford Wilson, sir, you seem like you've had a good life. Your attitude's good. You're still having fun. You're having a good time, aren't you?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, and I tend to keep on doing exactly that.
I tell everybody I'm having the best time of my life. I can just live to enjoy it, you know, just hang around a while.
Well, I like to keep adding to those birthdays, yes, sir. I'm proud of them now.
All right, sir. Well, we appreciate you, and we'll be to Tennessee to see you one day, and we thank you much. Clifford Wilson, thank you, sir.
You're most welcome.